Is this thing working? Is my mic on? Are we live? Have I done all the right things here? Welcome everybody to the very first live streamed episode of the Gaming Careers Podcast. Hopefully people recognize my face on this channel anyway, but if you don't, my name is Pete Wilkins. I run the Gaming Careers YouTube channel, educational channel all about live streaming. Some of you might not have seen Ben before, but keen viewers or listeners to the pod will have heard his voice before, that's for sure. So I'll introduce you, Benjamin Green. How are you from over in the States?
I'm good. It's actually a decent time of day for me today. It's not 6 a.m., so I'm happy to be doing this time. I know you're a little bit later over there today. How are you?
Yeah, so we've moved times, basically. We used to record the podcast because it wasn't live streamed. Nice and early for Ben. What was it, 6 a.m. that you had to get up to record it? Because you had to do it before work, of course. but now we want to get all the American viewers in, so hopefully we've managed to sync up time zones nicely. It's not too late here. It's only like 5 p.m., so you know, it's just Monday evening. But before we get started, I just want to say I did not expect to see so many people coming into the first live stream chat. It's incredible to see like so many familiar names, people that I've seen in the Gaming Careers Discord over the time. So awesome to see so many people in chat introducing themselves and saying hi. I really didn't expect to start off with such a popular stream, but we've got plenty to talk about. Where do you want to start here, Ben? Because there's been a lot of news over the last week, a lot of controversy. We thought we'd dive straight in, didn't we, with the thumbnail as well.
If you saw the thumbnail, it may have been a spoiler, but we got to start off strong with the first live podcast, Pete. And we got to go right for the big topic off the bat, I think. And I think we have a new way to actually talk about stuff this week with this format, correct?
Yeah, so we can, one of the nice things about live streaming a podcast is we can share things on screen. Because previously a lot of people listened to the podcast, but we didn't really ever share anything, even in the video version, did we? So we can sort of look at Twitch clips and tweets, and we've got plenty of things lined up for the pod today to hopefully help break down some of these topics. The hot tub streamer one, though, this is an interesting topic, because it's one of those things, isn't it, where it's been, I feel like, discussing what people can and can't wear on stream has been a discussion since Twitch began. It's always been going on. There was body painting, there was low cut tops, there was differences between what male and female can show, and it's always a hot topic. But I've never seen it kind of blow up with so many people having such an opinion as this new hot tub meta. So, I mean, maybe there are some people out there that don't really know what this is. So I guess I'll explain it. Because really, it's the vagueness of Twitch's terms of service. That's what it comes down to. You can argue about who you think is in the wrong. Personally, I think Twitch as a platform has to decide, really, what they want to do. But a lot of streamers, well, not even a lot, but there's a lot of people linking to these streamers, so I guess they're being made quite popular, are maybe rightfully or wrongly abusing the terms of service, which state that you can wear swimwear in the correct setting. So if you're in a swimming pool or in a hot tub. So a lot of people now are putting hot tubs into their stream rooms and streaming from there. And it's kind of, I feel like it's one of the things that's being talked about a lot more than it's actually a problem. So it makes it sound like it's a bigger problem than it is. But it's got to the point now where Twitch actually addressed it this last week in a live stream that they did, or DJ Wheat did on their main Twitch channel. So we have got some clips from that. But first of all, I guess I'll get a bit of an opinion from you, Ben. What do you think about the hot tub method? When's your hot tub arriving? You said you'd ordered it recently, right?
Yeah, it's gonna get right behind me. I'm gonna do all my streams out of that pretty soon. It's gotta be a comfortable way to stream, I'll say that. It's very, very soothing to be streaming that long that way. No, I think it's a very controversial topic that we talked about. There's a lot of different takes on it. And I think, kind of like you said, it's just been taught to death at this point because of the different opinions and the response that we saw come out from Twitch, which I think we'll show here in a sec. And like you said, it really comes down to a terms of service thing. I mean, you can argue whether people should or shouldn't do something, but ultimately it's kind of Twitch's choice as to what they allow on the platform, right? And so I think that's where the frustration has come from some people as to whether they think that the TOS should be more strict or that people are doing things that are already against TOS. And so it's just interesting to not see. I mean, Twitch kind of had a response to DJ Wheat. This was their Twitch chatter or let's talk kind of thing that we talked about before. So this is, I think, one of the first ones they've done. And I don't know. I think really it's kind of up to the creators to do what they can with the TOS that we have, and up to Twitch to kind of respond to that. But we haven't really seen a super strong response yet.
Yeah. One thing I will say, I've seen like some people who, I swear it's the same people that would say this about any category of streamers, but the people that feel like these hot tub streamers are stealing their viewers. And I just don't agree with that. If you really think that your content it appeals to both people that want to watch hot tub streamers and your stream, then you must have some kind of crossover there. I don't think they're stealing your viewers. I think it's people that will come to Twitch that want to watch that kind of thing that end up watching that kind of thing. I don't necessarily think that they're leaving your stream to go and watch somebody in a hot tub, but who knows? Maybe it is a bigger problem. But yeah, this is the first time we've really seen Twitch address it. I will say I really like that Twitch is hopefully running this weekly or monthly Let's Chat live stream, because there is a lot of concerns and there's a lot of issues that always get brought up about Twitch. And I 100% thought they were going to skirt around this. I don't know if you thought they were going to address this in the first stream, like the hot tub meta. So it was interesting to hear them address it in the first stream.
Yeah, I didn't think they would, honestly, because we've seen these things before and they always avoid the hard topics. Like, I'm sure people talked about the dock ban in that stream, and that was definitely not talked about, right? And it's never going to be talked about by Twitch. But the hot tub thing was, but the problem is, I will talk about the clip in a second, but the way that it was responded to was not great. And so I'm worried that would make them kind of worried about addressing other hot topics in the future because of how this first one went. I don't know, because it really was not super great for how DJ Wheat handled that and the fallout that came after that.
Mm. Let's actually roll the clip then. Let's see what we're talking about here. So hopefully you guys can hear this.
At Twitch, that this has been getting a lot of attention from the community lately, and we have been watching closely. Our nudity and attire policy does allow bathing suits in an appropriate context, and hot tubs do fall under that criteria. However, what has not...
I've just realized that I've got this playing back at 1.5 times speed, because
I was going to say,
I'm one of those people DJ Wheat. I'm one of those people that watches everything at like 2x speed. If you listen to this podcast at 1x speed, there's something wrong with you. We speak too slowly.
So it's 4x for the podcast.
Yeah, it's 4x for the podcast. Right, I'm slowing it back down to 1x now. Back on.
Changed is the sexually suggestive and explicit content is not allowed under the guidelines, under the TOS, and Twitch will take action when that is reported to us. So I understand that people are upset about some of the content that might be, you know, out there. And I think there's two things I want to take away from this. First and foremost, the teams are watching this. They are looking at it. The nudity and attire policy, you can go and review it. It does allow bathing suits, right, in a proper context. Sexually explicit and sexually suggestive content is not okay. And again, action will be taken if it's reported to. But I want to talk about two things.
Let's before we jump into the two solutions, I'm putting in solutions in my inverted commas here, if you can see my webcam. let's first talk about his kind of stance on it, because Twitch is kind of just standing behind their terms of service here. They're not necessarily saying that they think it's bad. They still think that these are people using the terms of service correctly, and they're using it in proper context, so to speak. I mean, you could argue, is it proper context to then put a hot tub into your room just so that you can wear a bathing suit? But I don't necessarily think what these people are doing to stream is wrong. It's really down to Twitch as to whether or not they want that on their platform. So
yeah, I mean, kind of the impression you're getting from it is they're saying, hey, if you think it's an issue, you should report it, and then we'll take action. So really they're kind of saying, we don't really see an issue, right? Because they're going over some of this stuff right now. That's kind of the implied response from this. So, and he goes further into it through the clip, but it kind of seems like you should just report it if you want to. Although I know there's a lot of criticism around, well, we have reported and nothing happened, from people who think it's a problem. So I think that's where the frustrations come from.
Yeah, it definitely seems like he skirted around the answer, didn't it? It's mm-hmm. a strange one for him to want to handle on stream, because
yeah.
You kind of feel like you'd want a rehearsed answer, or at least to have thought through like what you want to say, because he's a Twitch employee, right? This isn't just like somebody's opinion. He's streaming on the Twitch channel here. This is twitch.tv/Twitch. So this is as close as we can get to like Emmett telling us what he thinks about it, really, is to have an employee as high up as DJ Wheat, mm-hmm. somebody that's been there for as long as DJ Wheat, sort of stating his feelings. And it sounds like they don't think it's wrong. They're standing behind their terms of service. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's the implied answer. And he is kind of, because they're doing this as official Twitch, this is on the Twitch channel. He's kind of the representative for Twitch for this, right? So I don't know if it's just his opinion for what he's going through with this experience, but he's really kind of, whatever he shows here is it represents all of Twitch as a whole. So I guess that's kind of how the platform feels right now. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some other responses come out in the next week or so, because this has got so much discussion now. And it's the first time we have an official response from Twitch. So I wouldn't be surprised if they iterate on it, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we're definitely going to have to follow and see if they tighten the rules. The weird thing is that they don't consider it sexually suggestive. And I don't think it takes a genius to watch one of these streams and realize the whole point of them is to be sexually suggestive.
Yeah, I think the point is that some of them are being abused, right? Like there is a case where this thing makes sense for streams, and there's a case where people are just trying to get around loopholes essentially to do this, and that's kind of what it feels like they're moving towards. I've seen some, for example, are really crazy. I'm not going to name any names, but some are. I'm very surprised they're still on the platform in that sense. So I think that's where people are getting frustrated for, and not like the 90% of people who are fine doing just regular streams where that's totally allowed.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to think about you as a Twitch streamer, Ben. When you're telling friends or family friends and things like that, oh, I stream on Twitch, you want to be known as, you want them to know what that means. And if the next time they're like, oh, let's actually see what Ben's doing, they go to Twitch and like something like that's on the front page, it doesn't exactly do your credibility a load of good. So it kind of lessens the term Twitch streamer, I think. I think people are going to be a little bit more like reserved about sharing where they stream almost if Twitch doesn't do anything about it and thinks it's fine. Because I'm not a parent, you're not a parent, but if you walked in on your young son or daughter watching Twitch and that was one of their options to watch, you wouldn't exactly feel great about that being on the website, would you?
Yeah, that's for sure one of the points I've seen. And also on the advertising side, I think there was one of the hot tub streamers, actually, there was a quote, I don't remember who it was, and I probably shouldn't name them anyway, but something like this is going to affect Twitch's bottom line badly, but it'll affect mine well. So if you think about advertisers, it's probably not the reason they're coming to Twitch is to advertise on streams like that versus the known audience demographics on Twitch. So I think if it does keep going out of control like this, it could actually impact the bottom line for Twitch a little bit. And then we'd probably definitely see a response on that side.
I mean, I saw somebody tweet, I can't remember who it was, but somebody just shared, why doesn't Twitch just make a breakout 18 plus version of their website and compete with OnlyFans? They already have all the technology in place. They probably, you know, would be able to make absolutely loads of money, and then they can keep Twitch as the, you know, the PG-13 version. But I very much doubt that's going to happen. Let's listen to the rest of the clip, because DJ Wheat's got a couple of solutions for us here, Ben.
Things. First off, is that we think that it is important for you to be able to control the content that you see. Right, whether it is a hot tub stream or it is a game that you don't particularly like or a creator that you don't necessarily fancy, not everything appeals to every person. And I understand that. That is, that makes a lot of sense. We as creators and as just humans, there's things we love, there's things that we don't love. So I want to show everyone that this exists too. And I hope that you will start using this. Now, I know this is just kind of a supplement to the answer overall. But did you know that you can actually click these three buttons right here? And you can say, I am not interested in the game Fortnite. And you can click on that and it will not show me Fortnite related streams.
I love that he uses Fortnite as an example of that. He's planning
out. I endorse that pick.
He's like, he's like, I need to work out which game I can offend here. Fortnite, it's been too big for too long. I mean, I think you get the vibe here as to what he's talking about. Essentially, I think the same thing exists on YouTube, doesn't it? Where you can sort of click the three dots, choose that you're not interested in a certain stream or a certain category, and then you shouldn't have that recommended to you anymore. I'll mute it and just keep playing the clip, because it does then show that if you accidentally click that you're not interested in somebody or in a certain category, you can go into your settings and undo that if you wish to. So this is pretty cool, I guess, that Twitch has added this. It's definitely not a solution. This is like a minuscule implementation of what would be considered a fix, but it is a nice feature, because as Twitch gets more popular, you're definitely going to be able to want to shape your front page as you do. So yeah, here's the bit where he's showing basically that you can cancel the I'm not interested in a category or in a certain streamer. So yeah, I mean, this is nice. It's nice that Twitch is doing it, but it again just feels like something that they've quickly put together to hopefully stop the amount of hate that they're probably getting on Twitter about this whole thing, rather than really just stop making the terms of service so broad and so easy to understand in different ways. It's so gray, like, isn't it? There's so much middle ground where you can play with these terms of service and say, well, it's not sexually suggestive, I'm in a hot tub, so you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think spend more time really nailing down so streamers know what is right and wrong. And I know there was a lot of clips from DJ Wheat through the week of him skirting around topics about, you know, I'm a streamer and I want to know what is right and wrong. I saw somebody emailing to Twitch partner support saying that he wanted to do a cooking stream, and part of that he wanted to cook a lobster, but he didn't know if that was allowed or not on stream to cook a lobster that was live. But he didn't get any response, and his point was like, there's no way of finding out about these kind of things and finding out if I'm allowed to do things like that. So they just need to clear up the whole terms of service, I think, and really make it easy for anyone to understand. And I don't think that any of these girls or people that are doing hot tub streams at the moment are doing anything wrong, because they're just skirting around the terms of service. You don't have to worry, but if you don't want to watch them, you don't watch them. It's down to Twitch and whether or not they want them on the platform. And like I said, it does affect other streamers just purely because are you then embarrassed to tell people that you're a Twitch streamer? Because they're thinking, yeah. Oh, right, what's your swimsuit like?
Yeah, and so he did say it's a stopgap solution, is the not interested thing. So I at least will mention that. But the other issue is they showed that this doesn't always work on some channels too. I think there was the clip that came out, someone showing the promoted streams, which I think happens when channels actually can, it's a channel points reward that we talked about before, correct? Mm. When that goes up, that can't be not interested in on the homepage, if that makes sense. So there are some times where you just can't block the stuff for your homepage. I think that is a potential cause for concern. Obviously, you should be able to block promoted streams too. And I don't know if it was the channel points thing or if it was actually Twitch promoting that. In that sense, there's a whole other discussion there, I think, to have. But yeah, there's got to be more control over just being able to filter that kind of stuff when it's not in a game category too. I think that's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, I mean, even if it is viewers using the channel boost, you know, boost the streamer functionality, you should be able to still report that as you're not interested. Like, why would that make a difference as to why you as a viewer are interested or not in it? So I don't quite know what these promoted streams are, but yeah, I've got that up on screen now for people. Somebody discovered that basically you can't mark streams that are promoted as not interested, so you technically can't you can't hide them from your feed. I think that's probably more likely to be a bug rather than, you know, something that's intentional. But we need to really understand what that promoted thing is. I don't know if that's maybe just in certain countries and maybe something that we don't see in the UK or US. But yeah, that seems more like a bug. But I think this whole topic really, obviously we're two men talking about it. So we don't have the widest context and understanding of how this can affect other streamers. And, you know, there's plenty of non-hot tub female streamers that I think feel various different ways about this whole thing. I've seen a lot of the top streamers like Pokimane and Valkyrie, I know that she's not on Twitch anymore, but have opinions on this kind of thing, and it obviously affects a lot of creators in different ways, and it's good to be having this discussion and holding Twitch accountable to hopefully either making some kind of clarity in their terms of service or at least letting people know, is it allowed, isn't it allowed? Because right now they're kind of just saying, yeah, it is allowed because it's not sexually suggestive, and I think a lot of people disagree. But we've covered the hot tub, right? We've covered the thumbnail that we've used for this live stream now, so should we move on to the esports certification news?
Yeah, so if you guys didn't see this, which actually just got an update even this morning, it seems like there was a esports certification that came out last week from Esports Certification Institute. Basically, the idea was it was comprised of a bunch of industry people in gaming who were coming together to form a certification. You could, you know, pay for a test essentially to take. It's like $400 test. And then that was supposed to be something you could use as a way to get into the gaming industry in esports or orgs or, you know, whatever part of the org you want to get into. There was a lot of controversy around this because of the price tag, I think, mainly. because it was $400 to get that certification. And then even then, like, it's not really guaranteed you're going to get anything. The reason they made this, according to what they said, was to try and get around nepotism in the esports industry and gaming, and trying to make it feel like you can actually work towards it and be qualified for a job, as opposed to getting it through networking and knowing the right people for the job, which has historically been the case. So this actually, just this morning, I think they completely canceled it and refunded everyone who's subscribed to the, or had bought the course or the training, that kind of stuff. So it's actually been rolled back because of all the response. But Pete, what'd you think about seeing all this kind of come in the past week?
Yeah, again, this was something that was sort of announced. I don't think many people knew about it apart from the advisors that were behind it. And instantly negative feedback, people just retweeting that they got into the industry without having to pay for a $400 exam and all these kind of things. And, you know, I do think there is a problem with the esports industry and trying to get a job. And there's probably far too many people that have to start by doing free work and favors, or you have to know the right people to get a job. And as this becomes a more legitimate industry, we're going to see things like this come to place. You know, you're going to see people try and put certifications behind it. And whether that's a bad thing or a good thing, I don't necessarily know if I think it was as awful as a lot of people said it was, but it has to be done in the right way. It has to actually be useful. It has to be a test that is hard enough to pass that you as an employer know that this person is good and qualified to work in the esports industry. And it kind of looked, I think, to a lot of people that it was, you know, pay $400, get a certificate, and then you're probably not going to get a job anyway, because they're still going to look through your CV and see you're not qualified, type thing. But like you said, this blew up, and the website actually doesn't exist anymore. I can't believe they took the website down so quickly. I went to try and get something to share on my screen here, sort of looking at the advisors, and the website's down. It just goes to like a WordPress login. I thankfully did manage to get to the web archive of the advisors page, because it's an impressive roster of people. Like, I think this is one of the things that really took a lot of people by surprise, was the quality of the advisors behind it. I'm showing some on screen now, but a lot of these people, you know, own esports organizations or businesses that work in esports, or at least in like the streaming industry. You've got big names like Carlos, owner of G2, Sean Plott, obviously. Really a very, very stellar advisor board. So you've got to think that the idea behind it was probably good. A lot of people agreed with it, and probably the test was pretty good as well, if all these people had input over the test. But I'm just so surprised at how quickly it crumbled and has now been deleted. So yeah, I've got a couple of tweets here. This one from the Esports CI Twitter account, which basically just says, you know, like, we got it wrong. Thanks for all the feedback. We've read everything. We have plenty to fix and much to iterate through. And this was, you know, April 29th. And then literally a few hours later, the CEO basically said, we've made the decision to take down the ECI certification. Everyone's getting a refund. And now the website doesn't exist. So it's like, it's gone full circle so, so quickly. I can't believe that they kind of backed down as easily as they did. I kind of thought from the Esports CI tweet that they were going to refund everybody and work on it to make it better. And they may still do that. But this tweet from the CEO makes it look like they kind of just packed their bags and realized like they don't want all the backlash from this, and they're going to step away. So yeah, really interesting, like full loop basically. But how did you get your entry into esports, Ben?
Well, yeah. So for context, I do work in the industry. I work for Lenovo, if anybody doesn't know. I actually just kind of found it through a startup, and then essentially that was a gaming startup for 3 years. Then that was experience to get me to Lenovo. And I got kind of lucky with that first start. So I'll be honest, like, having experience is really important in the gaming industry, and having some sort of way to get a foot in the door. So I think that the idea behind this is actually pretty good. And if you have real advisors that are giving really credible advice on how to break in, like what kind of skills you need in the industry for whatever job you're looking for, and some really good knowledge. They even talked about how esports changes a lot, which is true. And so whatever the certification is or the path has to change a lot. But the problem is they paywalled it behind this certification. And then, like, even if everyone gets the certification, then does it really help you stand out at that point if it's the only one you can get? So I think there's some problems with how they actually executed on it, but the idea makes sense. I think really, like, even if the advisors could do things that aren't behind a paywall to talk about, like, how can you break into the esports industry or gaming industry to find jobs? What kind of skills do you need? That kind of stuff could be really, really cool. with the board they have, because like you said, the board is really impressive for people that are behind this program. We need some better execution on what it looks like. But I don't know. You have thoughts, Pete?
They did mention that they had like a scholarship program. But you know, it's not hard for them to make a scholarship program and give one away. it's whether there's actually any substance behind that. I think people were just taken back by how much of a cash grab it looked like. People in the esports industry and the streaming world are like so quick and finicky to point out anybody that's trying to make money. And I think that is a problem, but like it's also a good thing because it's such a new industry. You can call a lot of shady behavior. You know, we have so many peripheral manufacturers that for years just slapped gamer on the peripheral, charged more, or maybe an RGB color choice on the peripheral and charged more for the gamer tag. And it's good that people call stuff like that out. So yeah, in some ways I like that people were straight away saying, you know, I don't believe that you should be paying $400, but a lot of people must be questioning the advisor board. Like there's so many good advisors on that, so there must be some good work that has gone on. So maybe it'll come back in a different format. Maybe it'll be an online course rather than a written test. We'll see. But mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting to include this week just because both of us have, I mean, I don't know if you call my job in the esports industry necessarily, but before I did this, I did do some like freelance videography for esports organizations. I flew out to America with the G2 CSGO team and like made a documentary of their tournament out there. And yeah, it was kind of lucky that I got that, basically just that I had a good enough showreel of working in random esports projects and just mm-hmm. favors of mates and things like that. So it is a difficult industry to break into. I just think as it becomes a more legitimate industry, as time goes on, there's going to be better ways of getting into it. You're probably going to start to see, you know, university and college degrees that specialize in certain aspects, and you know, the organizations in this esports industry start to offer internships and things like that. Hopefully it's just going to slowly nurture a way of people being able to get into what is a rapidly growing industry.
And I think, like, so I talked to a lot of people in interviews and things from some orgs like TSM and Intel about how to get into this stuff, because it is a problem for people. There's a huge demand to get into gaming with a career, but actually doing it can be very challenging. The thing is, I don't think you always need to, like, you don't need to pay $400 for a certification to do that per se. I think you can do a lot with just building up a portfolio, like you said, in videography or whatever it is you want to do. There's some way you can get experience with that for free and then translate that to show what you've done to actually get a job in the future. So I think that's where I had some doubts about it. Again, I think the board's really cool and they could do a lot of education around that piece. Like, what kind of skills should you develop? Okay, go develop that now and build a portfolio, then come back, not buy a certification that doesn't show you actually have done anything yet. Like for all the hiring managers or people in the industry I've talked to, the experience is way more important than being able to pass a test essentially of knowledge.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've probably given that enough time. We have a few new Twitch updates this week. Let's go through them now. Some are bigger than others. The first one that they tweeted about was chat replies, which essentially is allowing you to now have a thread where you can reply to a certain message in Twitch chat. I think there's a hotkey as well, maybe like Alt Enter or something like that. Again, a lot of people didn't really like this, and it's going to make reading chat really messy for those super popular Twitch streams. I'm not really sure how much pressure there was to implement something like this. Like, are people trying to have so many different conversations in chat that you want to reply to each other? I guess this is more for the small to medium streamers rather than the big streamers, where like chat is an overall like hive mind. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, this is weird because they add this to Discord recently, and I didn't like the feature at all at first. And then suddenly I use it all the time. I don't know what happened, but I love the feature now. So I'm glad they're rolling out to everyone on Twitch. It was in some Twitch channels originally as a test, but now I think it's going out to everybody. So I actually will use it. I know it felt a little clunky at first, but now I miss it if it weren't there. I don't know. Have you used it on Discord or anything yourself? Yeah,
the thing is, on Discord though, it's useful, especially if a lot of chat has happened. So say you come back to your computer after lunch or something like that. A lot of chat has happened and you want to make sure that the person you're replying to knows that you're replying about that certain message. But does that happen on Twitch? Like, are you getting back to your computer and replying to a 10-minute-old chat message? I guess if chat is moving super slowly, then maybe you are. But I did watch a few Twitch streams today to see if anyone was using this. In the bigger streamers, it doesn't seem like anyone's really using it. But maybe it's more prominent in the smaller communities.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some channels where there's multiple conversations going on between people, and I could see a use there, but then again, like, why use Twitch for that? Just move to a different platform, because it's gonna be hard to have like a long conversation just between yourselves on Twitch. So I don't know, I think it's still a nice feature to have. You don't have to use it either, so I mean, you just avoid using it if you don't want to see it there. I don't think you can turn it off in your channel, as far as I know. That might be nice for creators too in the future.
Yeah, again, that is such an easy win for Twitch. If they make these features that some people think they might not want, if they make them the option for the streamer to be able to enable and disable them, like, you can't lose as a company then, Twitch, because people can be annoyed, but you can just tell them they can turn it off, or you can make it off by default and ask people to enable it. I guess they want to try and keep the number of options that a streamer has to get through, like, relatively simple. I don't hate it. I don't see myself using it loads. But it's interesting that you bring up the Discord side of things, because I do use it on Discord, so maybe I'll start using it more on Twitch. Next up, we have the /me commands. So for those of you that haven't been on Twitch for more than 6 months and haven't seen people try to troll donations, this method, you used to be able to type /me and then whatever you want, and the rest of the text would appear in the same color as your username in the Twitch chat. So you saw a lot of... I'm assuming kids, but it could just be immature people, in all honesty, try and bait streamers with fake donations this way. So they would do /me donated $100. And maybe less experienced streamers would read this. And because it was in a different color to the rest of chat, they would think, oh, this is official. This has officially come through Twitch or something, and would thank them for their donation. But really, it's just people that knew about /me. So the update here really is just the color is no longer, it just goes into italics. So I don't see anybody using this feature for anything anymore. Like, it's basically like a Facebook status, isn't it, in Twitch chat that you write in. It's so funny, because whenever Twitch releases any kind of update, you can see people getting annoyed about this. And I'm like, it's such a minimal change. Like, who's getting annoyed? The people that are getting annoyed are probably the people that baited streamers with the /me, because it doesn't really make any difference if you're trying to use this command legitimately. But yeah, such a minor feature, but I thought we'd cover it just because maybe not a lot of streamers knew what /me was before this. Have you ever been trolled with this?
Yeah, about once a week. I saw actually a resurgence of that recently. I don't know why. It's a fun little feature, but I'm not going to miss it that much. I used it maybe like once a year, maybe. The problem, I think, was people actually found a way for it to look exactly like system messages, because I saw some guy on Reddit, it's like, if you change your username to be gray and then go to a new line and then type system has banned you or whatever, it looks exactly like an official message from Twitch. So I could see why there's actually concern. People found a way to make it, add a link in there or something, or abuse it essentially for other people in chat too. That makes sense. And again, I'm not really going to miss the feature that much. It was kind of a cool thing, but I mean, how often do you actually see it used in streams?
Yeah, tiny, tiny feature. But that's a good point, if people are sharing how to make it look like a system message.
Yeah.
The last note, probably the smallest feature, is that Twitch have added a whole load of new sports tags to their system. So if you're streaming sports, you now have a huge list of sports tags that you can add. So this is a tweet from Zach Bussey, who tweets a lot of Twitch news. You can see pretty much any sport you could imagine is now available as a tag. So I think there's a good argument that Twitch are going to chase sports. We've talked about it a few times on the podcast this year, haven't we, that they've signed deals with some basketball leagues and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The one interesting one I saw on this, being British and you obviously being American, is there's football /soccer. So I'm imagining they're two separate tags, but I mean, there's not an American football on there. So if I want to tag my football, which you guys call soccer, as football, is it going to show up in the wrong tag industry? You know, they needed to make a stance here: American football and football, or soccer and football. It's too confusing as to what we should use over here.
There's also athletics, which just encompasses every sport. So I guess if you need to be something crazy, you can football maybe is athletics. Who knows? I think it's cool though. I hopefully we'll see more sports coming to Twitch. Like you said, they signed, I think, a wrestling league and a basketball league, and we might see more in the future too, because it just helps expand the range of non-gaming stuff on Twitch, which is cool.
What is pickleball?
That sounds like something in the UK. I felt that, like, no.
We have cricket over here. That one's on there. And I know no Americans understand the game of cricket because it's complex with the rules, but I've never heard of pickleball. Maybe somebody from chat can let us know what on earth pickleball is.
I can't. Yeah, I have no idea.
I'm not googling it live on the podcast. We've got to take some. We've got to be safe in some aspects on this. So I'm not going to start typing in search terms that I don't know. But yeah, those were fairly minor, I guess, Twitch updates. But they do roll out little updates, so it's always nice to cover them in the podcast. Next up, I guess we can talk about the SongTrader acquisition. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so if you guys know Pretzel Rocks, which is a pretty common used music service for streamers because of the licensing it takes care of and offers a bunch of libraries of music for you to use on stream without DMCA worries, SongTrader acquired them recently, which is pretty cool. I didn't read a ton to this one, but anytime that a service like that gets picked up that was kind of made for streamers by a broader company is a good sign that company is doing something right and that there's kind of a broader acceptance for that in the industry. So this is super cool, and I hope that we see a bit more stuff like this come to other services in the future too. Did you see a lot more of this? I just kind of briefly skimmed this one.
All I really read into is just how big of a company SongTrader is, because to somebody that doesn't really know anything about music and copyright and things like that, it might just look like one small company but another relatively small company. But SongTrader has like fingers in many different pies when it comes to music licensing and music in general. So I think it's a pretty big deal for them to acquire Pretzel, and probably means that we're going to see Pretzel be one of the big providers of copyright free or safe music for you to use on your live streams. Mm-hmm. Because Pretzel really has pushed as that is their sole direction. It's just live streams, right? They've really gone after that market rather than, you know, companies like Epidemic Sound. They're a bit more open, you know, YouTube videos, live streams, podcasts, TikToks, things like that. Pretzel wants to be the live stream one. It's the one that had the chatbot implementation. So I think you could use it for free. I don't know if you still can, but it has some messages that have to go into your Twitch chat whenever you change song and things like that, just to make the service more popular. If they've been acquired for a decent amount of money, or SongTrader are going to, you know, keep putting money into the platform, then we're going to see a bigger library of music. That's the first, most obvious solution. So it's a good thing for us content creators. I think more money in any of these companies is hopefully going to mean a bigger library, better features, more education around what you can and can't live stream, which still needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked a lot about DMCA this year, so I guess this is a company realizing that it is a problem and hopefully helping Pretzel. I never know if I should be calling them Pretzel Rocks. Their name is clearly Pretzel, but the URL is pretzel.rocks. So I've always thought they were called Pretzel Rocks, but I guess that's just them saying, you know, we rock and our name is Pretzel.
I always call them that too. I'm just going to keep calling Pretzel Rocks, to be honest, until they correct me. But I think it's cool because, like you said, they have some features for Pretzel specifically where they will link in the chat who the artist is and things like that. So it seems like Pretzel is a pretty good solution to support other artists, actually. Soundtrack had that potential on Twitch, but then the execution left a lot to be desired. So maybe the reason that SongTrader picked Pretzel is that they can actually use some of the artists that are out there to get on here for some advertising, things like that. Because one of the big things that's really cool about Twitch is that it can really give a lot of exposure to new artists who are coming up, or ways to get the word out there about music. And while I think it's great to have, you know, a library of stuff you can use that's copyright free, you could be helping another artist grow that has really good music at the same time. So it seems like that's kind of the ideal solution actually for DMCA down the road.
Yeah, and we're gonna see, I wonder if musicians now are going to want their music to be on these platforms. You know, if Pretzel really takes off with Twitch streamers and newer artists start to realize how much value that can create, then they're probably going to ask their label, how can we get, you know, how can I make my music DMCA safe? And one of those solutions might be to list it through Pretzel. So fingers crossed it means a greater variety of music, because I feel like the DMCA safe music has kind of, we saw it, didn't we, with the Metallica Twitch live stream. It started as like 8-bit music or like really, really generic lo-fi beats and things like that. And slowly we're moving towards a better selection of music. It doesn't sound like you're using such a cheap library, and you're starting to use some realistic music now. So hopefully it continues to be that way. And maybe one day we can live in this future where the music industry understands that it could be valuable to have your music playing on a live stream. And you know, we can wish, can't we, Ben?
But yeah, that's the dream. So by the way, I just want to say I can't wait till we can show clips like that on the stream now that we actually have a way to show that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, the Metallica one. Yeah, that is an absolute classic. I think I've saved that. Like I've downloaded it to my PC just to watch it every so often. I still can't believe it's not a joke that somebody has edited in that music. It's actually what they did live. Twitch, out of all channels. Speaking of Twitch, next up we're talking about the Phantom Lord case. Did you follow this? Because being a League of Legends player, you must have remembered Phantom Lord from the OG days of Twitch, you know, when it was a really small website. But we're going to talk about the lawsuit between Phantom Lord and Twitch, which is going on for 3-4 years, I feel like. It was ages ago, wasn't it, when all that CSGO gambling stuff was going on?
Yeah. Man, it makes me feel old. Yeah, so if you guys don't know Phantom Lord, he was one of the bigger streamers on Twitch. I think he had a couple records for viewership. And he got involved in this whole CSGO gambling scandal where he owned the site that was being run on. And if he got banned essentially off of Twitch for that in 2016. After that, he sued Twitch for $35 million in damages for what he claimed was unsubstantiated false accusations. And that started in 2019. The court proceedings started then. Only this year did they actually end. And he actually won the lawsuit against Twitch on all counts, but he did not quite get the $35 million. He got $20,000, which is slightly different than what he was going after. But still kind of interesting to follow this case. I honestly kind of did not expect the case to go through or even get close to being in his favor, but he apparently won everything, which is pretty interesting. People, you know, the streamer of Phantom Lord aside, I think the whole case is kind of interesting to look at bans on Twitch in general and see that they actually apparently can take this to court now as a viable thing if you're banned on the platform, depending on the allegations. So interesting to think through other cases too of some other streamers you might know who've been banned from Twitch. Pete, you have thoughts on this one?
Yeah, that is an interesting point. I think a couple of things to point out here is Phantom Lord will have been on a super old Twitch contract, like really old. Probably one from right back in the day that wasn't particularly professionally written. And I think since then, Twitch has really, you know, upped their game with the contract team, and they have much more bulletproof contracts, I'd like to think. And if not yet, then they definitely will be after having lost this case. They'll want to make sure that, you know, if they ban a Twitch streamer for whatever reason they seem viable, they don't have to pay out and go through like 3 years of lawsuits. So it is interesting that he won. Obviously, the funniest thing is like his tweet of like, I won, Twitch lost everything. Like, he literally was all claps. I think it's got it at the bottom here. I won my lawsuit versus Twitch on all counts. And like, he sued them for $35 million and got $20,000. Like, that's, you didn't win $35 million, mate. But I guess winning versus Twitch is something interesting, especially when we know that there's an ongoing legal battle of some sort between Dr. Disrespect and Twitch. Like, where's that gonna go now that there's there's actually proof of a case that somebody that got banned for reasons that they don't believe was in their contract winning? So interesting going forward. I feel like one day we'll learn about the reasons behind Doc's ban, but whilst it's a legal process, if this one took 4 years, then we're probably gonna be waiting till 2023 or something.
Yeah, who knows? I want to know the details on that. I don't really care as much about the Phantom Lord unban, more just the fact that this actually went to court and kind of sets a precedent for maybe we'll see more lawsuits come out for older contracts. Again, like you said, it was an older contract, so some of the newer ones are probably way safer and will be even safer from this point from Twitch's perspective for the courts. But I don't know, maybe some other banned streamers will come out, because there have been a couple other big ones that have been banned who could try to follow this if Phantom Lord was successful. So we'll have to wait and see on that side.
I think one thing I read, and I can't remember where I read it, but was that part of the lawsuit, Phantom Lord's lawyers had requested from Twitch the earnings for like the top 100 streamers on the platform. Because like you said, Phantom Lord used to hold some records. I think it says it in this article here that he used to hold the record for the most concurrent viewers at 143,000. So a big number, even though he hasn't streamed for like 4 years on the platform. So I wonder if Twitch did have to release these figures, how much these big streamers made, if that's then going to become public in the documentation, because I believe in America, like, a lot of these documents from lawsuits get released to the public, so people can find out those kind of things. And then, well, clearly Phantom Lord's lawyers were trying to use that to up the amount that he was going to receive. So maybe they didn't do very successfully if he didn't receive 20,000. Like, his law fees must have been more than that, I would have imagined, but maybe Twitch had to pay for them. But just this was interesting, just from the OG, like, I've been watching Twitch since it was just on TV, so I definitely remember Phantom Lord's League of Legends streams and then his downfall into CSGO gambling. And that's kind of something we've seen a bit of a resurgence now on Twitch. There's like a lot of streamers streaming gambling, and I personally feel like that's probably a bigger problem than the hot tub streams. Like arguably more detrimental to like a 14, 15 year old that's on the platform watching their favorite streamer gamble like insane amounts of money. But you know, I'm not the mother or father of Twitch, so I don't make those decisions.
Yeah, there's a lot of other like scam streams going around too. If you've seen the CSGO, and I saw somebody doing an Elon Musk fake stream where they're like, giving away Bitcoin, things like that. So there's a lot of weird things that should probably get fixed on Twitch. I think hopefully we'll see better systems to deal with that kind of thing, or just some TOS changes in the future too. So you also had recently a thread on YouTube, actually. You put out on Twitter, I think all socials, but I saw it on Twitter. Do you want to talk through that a little bit as well?
Yeah, this is obviously, I realize a lot of people listening to this podcast probably don't follow me on Twitter. So I wanted to at least mention this because it was a thread that I started writing and just kept adding to through the day. And then when I got to the end, I was like, I should have just made this a video. Like, there's so much content in this thread that I ended up making. It probably will turn into a video at some point, and this will just be the skeleton that I'll build around. Because if I bring up the tweet of activity here, yes, it's had over 85,000 impressions. So even though not a massive amount of likes, clearly a lot of people that reshared it did end up reading and going through it. But I wanted to put what I've learned about YouTube into a thread, because I think the day before this I crossed 300,000 subscribers, and I see so much misinformation about YouTube and the algorithm, and you know, the algorithm favors this over this, and I can't grow it because of the algorithm and this kind of stuff. And even bigger creators getting annoyed that their videos haven't been pushed by the algorithm. And you know, I fall into that camp. It is frustrating when you work really hard on a video and it doesn't get picked up by the algorithm, so to speak. So I just wanted to share some info on it, and I'll go through a little bit here. I will say that this is the last topic that we're talking about, so if anybody has a question in chat, we like to do a viewer question every week. Obviously this is the first time we've done it live, but put your question, if it's about streaming or whatever, into the chat, and hopefully Ben, if you keep an eye on that, you can pick out a question that we can cover at the end.
Yeah, I do want to say, some people are asking if this is live or premiere. It is live, guys. Hi, we're actually broadcasting. So let us know in chat your questions now, and I'll keep an eye out while we're talking about this last piece here.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ben. So what have I learned about being a YouTuber and growing gaming careers to 300,000 subscribers? Obviously, thanks to a lot of people that are watching in chat today. The main point, I'm not going to read this out verbatim, because you can just go and find the thread. It's on my Twitter. It wasn't that long ago. But the main point that I really wanted to help people understand is that the YouTube algorithm is designed for videos, is designed to find videos for viewers, not the other way around. So a lot of people think from the creator side, my video isn't getting pushed out or promoted by the YouTube algorithm, and that's why they're complaining. But the YouTube algorithm is designed the complete opposite way around. It's designed for people that arrive on YouTube and want to watch something, and the algorithm is trying to recommend videos that viewer is going to want to watch and enjoy watching, and hopefully keep them on platform. And like I've said here, like all platforms that have any kind of posting of media, they really just want two things. So this goes for YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, even Twitch now, because Twitch has got its own recommendation feature where it's trying to recommend live streams. They want to keep you on the site for as long as possible. Firstly, because, you know, they make money by you being on the site running adverts. All these platforms do. But secondly, if they can keep you addicted, so to speak, to the site, then hopefully you'll keep coming back and recommend more of your friends to come, and it just helps them grow their business model. YouTube is no different in that aspect. And the algorithm really is just trying to serve that purpose of trying to keep people coming back to the platform every day because they enjoy the content that they're seeing. So if they can recommend better content to the person, then hopefully that means they'll stay on YouTube for longer. I talk a little bit about like the history of the YouTube algorithm, how it used to rely on clickbait. This was the funniest screenshot for me to get. I wanted to put like some media with each tweet. And I was like, how can I talk about clickbait? Because none of my videos are very clickbaity. And then I just literally typed in Jake Paul pregnant, and he had like six videos. And I just took a screenshot of like the top two, you know, clearly clickbait videos, you know, with some she's pregnant text. He clearly makes one like every year, so its audience just grow up but forget, clearly. But clickbait is used less now. They look at metrics that are much more to do with still click through rate, but then what watch time does that result in? Are people satisfied with what they clicked on? Does it represent what the thumbnail and the title was? Do they then watch a lot of that content? Because they're trying to measure the quality of that content. I shared a screenshot here from one of my recent-ish popular videos about the Twitch streamer microphones. You can see here I had the thumbnail and title have 4.8 million impressions, which means that title and thumbnail have shown up together in YouTube 4.8 million times. And then from that, 5.8% of people end up clicking on the video, which is pretty good for my channel, and how many views then result from that click-through rate. But a lot of people chase a high click-through rate and they end up changing thumbnails and titles very quickly when they have a low click-through rate on YouTube. But it's a complicated statistic, because actually your most popular videos will often have the lowest click-through rate number. Again, showing an example here of one of my more popular videos, which is 100 tips for Twitch. This has got 44 million impressions, 90% of YouTube recommending my content, and just a click-through rate of 2.1%. So it's a really low click-through rate for my channel, but that is because it's being broadcast and suggested to the widest audience. So YouTube is basically pushing this video out to people that have never heard of me, never seen me before, maybe just shown a tiny bit of interest in live streaming or a tiny bit of interest in Twitch, to see if people will click through it. Because it's performed so well with similar viewers, they push this out to more people, so the click-through rate drops, even though it's a really popular video. Does that make sense to you, Ben?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask a point on that. So you mentioned that people are quick to change the title sometimes if it doesn't perform well. I've done that. I'm guilty of that. Do you recommend doing that? Like, have you ever done that, or you just kind of leave it and it is what it is after that?
Oh, absolutely. I do change them. And that's one of the things with being a YouTuber, is you really are proud of some content that you put out, and then if it doesn't perform well, you want to question why. And that's natural, and that's what you should be doing. What I do is I usually leave it for at least a week to really get an understanding of how it's performing. Because then you can look at not just the click-through rate, but also how many impressions it's getting and what the view time is from that. So you can understand, you know, did I really just miss the mark with this video, or are people just not clicking on it when they see it? Because if you've got a good view time, but a poor click-through rate, then you can probably understand that it's down to your thumbnail. I then use the TubeBuddy extension, which has one of the premium plans has an A-B testing feature where you can literally set two thumbnails and it swaps them every day. And then at the end of 14 days or whatever you set it to, it gives you a report based on what had the better click-through rate, what had the better watch time, which thumbnail. And you can do this for more than just the thumbnail. You can do it for the title or the description or the tags. Not that those things make as much of a difference. Title does, but description and tags are less impactful now. But that's a really useful tool that I use a lot if I do need to change a thumbnail. And quite often what I've been doing recently actually is making two thumbnails for my videos and then putting them up on a poll on Instagram and just getting a really quick 1 hour response. And I haven't got many followers on Instagram, but even if you get 100 responses, you get a good idea as to, you know, what the general vibe is, which one would people click on. But it's so psychological, isn't it? You can't always just say which one you would click on, because you don't actually know what you would have clicked on. There's a couple of good tools that you can use, like TubeBuddy. I then go on into a bit more detail about how the algorithm, there's different algorithms based on suggesting on the homepage versus suggesting in the up next. This is really useful if anybody wants to read through it. I don't want to go through it word for word, but I guess I can sum up with some of the tips that I had here about how you can use that info. So think about how your thumbnail and title come across to new viewers who have never seen your videos before. So like we talked about, my 100 tips for Twitch streamers, that's being suggested to loads of people that have never seen my videos before. So maybe it makes less sense for me to have my face in that, because people don't know what my face is. And I really just want them to grab their attention and hopefully get them in. And then think about the content of your video. You need to be providing value by entertaining, educating, or inspiring videos, inspiring viewers. It's beneficial if you can do more than one of these combined. I typically educate, and I probably want to try and work on bringing more entertainment into my content. But no matter what kind of content you're making, you need to think about the value that you provide. And that value can simply be entertainment. It doesn't need to be providing an educational side. It can just be fun to watch. So cut the fluff. Attention spans are short. Keep your videos engaging. and experiment. This stat that I had to Google this, 300 hours of content are uploaded every minute to YouTube. That really gives you a sense of how big of a platform this is. So experiment, try different things. Like, especially when you're a small channel, trust me, you think it's easy when you're a big channel, but I am envious of small channels, and they get to experiment, try different content. They don't really need to worry about how it lands with their audience because the audience is so small. Whereas when you get to a bigger size, and I wouldn't consider myself particularly big by any means, but you lose that ability to experiment so much because you obviously have an audience that expects certain type of content from you. So yeah, I'll leave this tweet down in the thread below, and I will definitely at some point make it into a video because it ended up being a fair amount of work and I think a fairly useful topic. Clearly a lot of people found it useful, but yeah, that probably sums it up.
That's great. Lots of knowledge in there. Still, I'm kind of on like the newer side of the YouTube journey, and it was very helpful for me to read through some of that stuff irrespective. So thanks for sharing that, and I would definitely love to see it in the video, like you said, in the future.
Absolutely.
We did have a couple questions come in. There are, I think, some quicker ones. Then we have another question to ask as well. First one was, why is Pete still wearing a hat? Did the haircut go awry?
Oh God, I didn't realize that somebody was actually going to pick up on this. The haircut isn't too bad, but I went on the too short side of things. I have a video going up early this week, actually, where I haven't got the hat on. So that's how you sell a video to your viewers. You don't show them the results now. You tease them into thinking about it later. So yeah, there'll be a video going up. It's not about my haircut, trust me, but my haircut does feature... But good to know I have some fans, because when during lockdown my hair was just growing and growing and growing, I didn't get any comments. I was like, oh, maybe people don't mind that I have like shoulder length hair now. But clearly somebody does notice. People do recognize me from the YouTube videos at the end of the day, so thank you for the question.
That was a good one. I think that was from Van Kraken Gaming, so thank you for that, man. We also had a quick one from Ron Mower, who said, I know that after we stream, the video does not process more than 11 to 12 hours in the VOD. I didn't know that, actually. My question is that will that count towards the watch time hours? I think to get affiliate, I'm guessing, and things like that, or other requirements. So does the VOD count towards watch time hours?
Yeah, over on Twitch, mm-hmm. I believe it does. So it doesn't matter where you're getting the watch time. I think it would be harder to warrant that in partner application. Just because I know mm-hmm. that the partner applications, they're like super scrutinized who your viewers are. I've seen a few threads of people that have like had a few embed viewers that have clearly always watched it through an embed, and they've really struggled to get partner just because of like these few viewers. So I'd imagine when you get to partner, the scrutiny is much tighter as to who your viewers are and where they're coming from and are they watching your VODs or your live streams. But I think for affiliate, it would count for both.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. I don't know that you're going to get a huge chunk of people watching your VODs. That's not super common, at least compared to live viewership on Twitch. But I guess if you're trying to get that mark, that could help you out a little bit. Last question was from Metalfish, and this was about Guilded. It said, have either of you tried Guilded? Do you think it could ever compete with Discord? So Pete, do you know what Guilded is? Have you seen it?
I have definitely typed in the URL, and I think I've maybe watched a video or two about it. It looks very similar. I can bring it up actually on the screen.
Oh,
share.
We can do that now. Yeah. That's right. fancy.
It's basically a competitor to Discord, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I think it actually can work with Discord too. So well, I've just seen
the title is Drop Discord, Get Guilded. True. They're not even being subtle about this whole thing. They literally put it right in their header.
Yeah, that's fair. I know that they integrate with Discord to a degree, and I think it's more about events was one of the standout features that I saw. So you can see in the third tab here, you can actually create like raid nights or team practice nights, things like that to help with that type of thing. But it looks just like Discord, to be honest with you. I have not tried it. I've not downloaded it and really poked around too much. It sounds like Pete probably hasn't either. But I don't know. Do you think that Discord has a competitor in Guilded based on this first impression?
I mean, Ben, it's got threads. It's got replies. What more do you
need?
That's
all we need.
I've seen that there is also, I think, some monetary side of it. Like you can run a community and have like a subscription base built into Guilded, where they get access to certain channels or to be able to join you on I don't know, streams or something like that. I need to do more research into it. It looks pretty clean from the website, I've got to say, but it does also look very, very similar to Discord. So I'd hope that they're going to be able to build a feature set that moves away from Discord, whereas right now it looks like it's basically a replica, and since all your mates are already using Discord, why would you move across?
Yeah, the thing is, so Discord, I talked about this before, doesn't really have a real competitor in the space right now. I mean, you can say there's like Teams and Slack, but nothing like in the gaming space really. The thing is, I don't have a complaint with Discord, you know, in a different way than like Twitch and Mixer and that kind of stuff. I don't really have an issue with Discord. I don't know, do you?
Well, no, and especially since the news came out that they weren't going to do a deal with Microsoft, because I think a lot of people were worried about, you know, Microsoft ruining the Discord experience like they have done with some other acquisitions. It looks like Discord's probably going to go for public funding, which is definitely better for us consumers, because you'd hope that that's going to be, you know, less influenced by a big company, you know, signing with Xbox Live or whatever that Microsoft would have done with it. So they do need a competitor, though, because you always want a competitor as a consumer, True. Don't you? It's going to push them in the right direction. And we talked a bit about how Slack is maybe a business version of Discord, and there's definitely going to be version, like, I think Steam and Origin, they all try and build their own, like, little community features that are kind of similar to Discord, but nothing that handles such a vast array of gamers, like, right now. Like, you can have a Discord with five of your mates that you use for team voice when you're playing a game, and you can have a Discord like the Gaming Careers Discord with, like, 10,000 plus members in, and it's stable for both. And I don't really think that there's another solution. But I'll tell you what, my promise for the live stream is I'll download Guilded. I'll try and find a server to join and see what the experience is like, because I think it's a good question. And I'm always interested in hearing about competitors to live streaming platforms or apps like Discord that we use every single day. So pretty good question, I think, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does have potential. The events thing in particular, again, there's not really a tool for that in Discord besides using bots to integrate. So if it's built in, that could actually be pretty cool for certain types of groups that need that. I think somebody else in chat said that Valentine said all the Nitro features of Discord are free on Guilded, which is kind of cool. I guess the animated emote and some of the higher channel thresholds, that kind of thing. So it could be worth checking out. I think the hardest thing will be getting the word out for Guilded, because Discord has spent, what, 5-6 years now trying to build their base. So Guilded's kind of got to catch up to that. And so building that could take a while.
And that's why there's so much value in Discord, and why we're seeing like the $10 billion acquisition that Microsoft was trying to do. They've got so many users' emails, and that's what all the value is tied up in. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I think good question. Let's go back to the full screen for us. Good question. I'd love to be able to get more questions in every week, but we do want to be respectful of your hour-long lunch break where we can hear Ben not run into the evening. I think this was a great success. I've had an absolute blast. I can't believe how many people came in to watch. For people that do normally listen to the audio version, we'll still be putting the audio version out on all the traditional podcast platforms, but now we do have a bit more of a visual element, so I would encourage people to at least try and stop by for our live stream, maybe next week. But it'll be every Monday, the exact same slot. So that is, let me get my time zones right, 9 a.m.
PST,
12 a.m. EST,
yep,
5 p.m. BST. I know that nobody uses BST except for us in Britain. It's British summertime. It's British summertime. But I've got like at least five viewers that also have an English accent. I'm sure of it. So yeah, thanks so much for everybody coming and listening and asking questions and being so active in the chat. I saw that we even had like a super chat, which I'm going to have to work out how that works, because this is the first time I've ever streamed to YouTube. But yeah, I really appreciate everybody coming and hanging out. I'd love to say that I'm going to do a really slick segue into like the outro music, but I have not got that planned. So it's just going to be a goodbye from me, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
See you guys.